May it please the court, my name is Andrea Ferrone and I represent defendant below appellant the City of Wilmington. We ask the court to reverse the Superior Court's partial denial of the city's motion for summary judgment. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'm going to address only 3 points in support of our argument, and we rely on our briefs for the other arguments. The question raised in this appeal is whether the protection from liability for ordinary negligence under 21 Delaware Code Section 4106D is a privilege or an immunity. Under Restatement Second of Agency Section 217, a principal has a defense to liability if its agent had a privilege which he properly exercised on his principal's behalf. But in contrast, a principal has no defense because of the fact that its agent had an immunity from liability.
Let me ask you, before you go on, basically, why is that a question in this case? Wouldn't it be only natural for us to read 4012 and 4011 along with 4106 and simply conclude that the employee is immune for negligence, but the municipality or political subdivision that employs him or her is not? And that reads all the statutes in harmony together. What makes 4106 special in some way that would cause us to depart from that matrix?
Well, basically, under our interpretation of Section 4106D, it does something different than the immunities and waivers of immunities conferred under the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act. The Superior Court interpreted subsection D to create an immunity from liability for ordinary negligence, and the second
for the individual.
Sentence, yes, and to waive the government's, which includes local government's, immunity from liability for ordinary negligence.
Which is consistent with 4011 and 4012.
Under the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act, under Section 4012.1, the city had already, and other local governments, had already waived immunity from liability for any type of ordinary negligence occurring in the operation of any type of motor vehicle.
And what does the record reflect with regard to the existence of insurance in this case?
In this case, the city self-insured. And that is reflected in the record. But under this court's interpretations of the 18 Delaware Code 6511, which waives the state's immunity from as to any risk that's covered by the state insurance program, this court has consistently interpreted that statute as not applying to municipalities. So when it comes to a local government, you look exclusively to the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act to determine whether the local government has waived immunity. And under Section 4012, there are only 3 specific exceptions to immunity. And this court has interpreted those exceptions to be exclusive and the only exceptions.
Well, what's the answer to Justice Allen's questions? Is there insurance available? Is there a cap on the self-insurance that the city makes available for automobile accidents?
Yes, there's a cap under Section 4013 of the Tort Claims Act. The cap is $300,000.
So that amount of money is available?
Yes. But the way that the Superior Court interpreted Section 4106D makes it redundant. Because even before Section 4106D was enacted in 1981, local government employees were already entitled to immunity for ordinary negligence committed in the scope of their employment under Sections 4011A and C of the Tort Claims Act.
So, just so I can understand your statutory argument, going back to insurance, you're saying that the city self-insured, it's made $300,000 available for some purposes, but notwithstanding the fact that $300,000 is available for some purposes, because of this statute, it's not available to these plaintiffs.
Yes, because subsection D, when read in connection with subsection A, the plain language of the statute creates a privilege, because subsection A, when it discusses the privileges set forth in this section, that modifies the entire section. It doesn't just refer to subsections A and subsection B.
But what about the policy we've discussed in other cases that seems to suggest the General Assembly wanted to protect individuals who were responding to emergencies, but yet have the political subdivisions they were working for remain liable to compensate the citizens who were injured during the course of their conduct?
Well, you have to read Section 4106D in the context, you have to read it in light of the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act and the history of that act. That act was passed, the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act was passed in 1979 through 62 Delaware laws, Chapter 124. And in the preamble to that act, the legislature expressed an intent to reestablish municipal immunity. And in the preamble, the legislature stated that the reason it wished to do so was that the unanticipated high cost of insurance and the multiplicity of lawsuits filed against municipalities in recent years threatened to prevent municipalities from being able to provide vital public services. So, under the plaintiff's interpretation of subsection D, in an accident involving an emergency vehicle, the city would be subject to liability in all circumstances, regardless of whether its employees' conduct was amounted to ordinary negligence, gross negligence, willful, wanton, reckless, or intentional conduct.
But your opponent says the language is plain. Why isn't it plain?
Under
when the owner of such emergency vehicle may not assert the defense of governmental immunity. What's unclear about that?
Well, because you also have to look at subsection A, where it refers to all of section 4106 as setting forth privileges. So that modifies not just subsection B of the statute as setting forth privileges, but also subsection D. Now, in the first sentence of subsection D, it doesn't use the word immunity, and it doesn't expressly refer to that protection from liability as constituting an immunity. And if you look at the second sentence of subsection D, it states that the government is precluded from raising the defense of immunity, but it doesn't state that the government is precluded from raising the separate defense of privilege.
And while we're talking about defenses, help me understand what would happen if your position does not prevail and there's a trial. Normally, negligence is conduct by a reasonable person under the same or similar circumstances. At a trial, could the city say what the officer did in this case was reasonable under the circumstances? That it might be negligent for somebody else to go through a red light, but here, when you're responding to an emergency, you look both ways and whatever, that this was reasonable for a police officer. Could you defend it on that basis?
That is an argument that we could raise based on the facts of this case and Officer Connor's conduct. So, under the Restatement Second of Torts, Sections 895C3 and 895B4, those sections provide that a waiver of governmental tort immunity doesn't establish liability for an act or omission that is otherwise privileged. So what subsection...
Well, on that issue, let's assume that the privileges are outlined in B, the privileges for emergency vehicles and their operators. The Superior Court judge, as I understand it, segregated from proceeding past a stop signal or a red signal and said that the common law allegations of failure to keep a proper lookout and failure to keep your vehicle under control could proceed to trial. There was no privilege to ignore those two acts. Now, am I reading what he said correctly?
Well, what his interpretation was that subsection D of the statute creates, there are four specific activities that are protected under subsection B. And Judge Sleitz interpreted subsection B to create privileges from liability that are also available to the government entity that employs the driver. But he interpreted subsection D as creating an immunity which is exclusive to the driver and can't be raised by a government entity.
Now, I understand that, but let's just take the first step. Let's assume that B sets forth the four privileges that the operator of the emergency vehicle has, that the owner of the emergency vehicle may also assert. That is, if we agree with you that the restatement has anything to do with this at all. He segregated from the actions of the driver of the emergency vehicle the driver's alleged failure to keep a proper lookout as he entered and proceeded through the intersection, and his failure to keep his vehicle under control, whatever that means under these circumstances, and concluded that those had factual issues that could go to a jury, and that those two acts, if established, were not privileges contemplated by 4106. Did he not?
Well, no. He disagreed with the cases that interpret B and D together and say that, you know, you're only protected from liability for ordinary negligence if the conduct fell within one of the four specific privileges set forth in subsection B. Judge Sleitz, in his opinion, disagreed with those cases' interpretation and said that subsection B basically encompasses the rules of the road, and B is a privilege. B creates privileges for those activities. And if the driver's conduct fell within one of those four specific categories, both the driver and the government were protected. But he said because those other activities, like failure to keep a proper lookout, couldn't fall into the one of those categories, he interpreted subsection D as creating a broader protection from liability for ordinary negligence that would encompass activities that didn't fall within subsection B. But he said that that protection was an immunity rather than a privilege.
Because it's not expressly a privilege under B.
Well, the subsection that uses the word privilege and states that privileges are set forth in this section is in subsection A.
No, I understand that. I can read the plain English as well as you can. A says that you may exercise the privileges set forth in this section. Therefore, you look in the section to see where the privileges are set forth. And the privileges appear to be set forth in B.
Well, there's also subsection D.
No, I know that. But subsection D is separate and independent of subsection A. And when you read A, you look for the privileges set forth in this section. And where do you find them? You find them in B. You don't find them in D.
Well, in D, the first sentence creates a broader, it's almost like a catch-all protection from liability for any type of conduct that constitutes ordinary negligence in the operation of an emergency vehicle.
Well, if you look at D, isn't it correct that all D does is recite the same policy that you find in 4011 and 4012 about government immunity, that the political subdivision employee is immune from ordinary negligence, but the political subdivision itself is only immune from the ultra vires acts, the intentional, reckless, willful, and wanton wrongful acts of the employee, but remains liable for the ordinary negligence of the employee up to the extent to which insurance is provided?
Well, the interpretation that this court has given the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act is that it protects, well, the local governments have waived immunity for ordinary negligence occurring in the operation of a motor vehicle, but the immunity is waived only as to ordinary negligence. The city
and that's what we're talking about here, isn't it? What's left?
Well, the city, under the Tort Claims Act, the city would still have immunity for conduct that exceeded gross negligence.
And that's exactly what D says under 4106.
Well, no, what the second sentence of D does, the second sentence of D would waive immunity for conduct that exceeds ordinary negligence. That's why that was necessary. Otherwise, under the first sentence of D, the local government would have a privilege from liability for ordinary negligence, and it would have also been able to claim immunity from liability for conduct that exceeded ordinary negligence.
Did you want to save your time for rebuttal?
Yes, I would like to do that.
Before you sit down, though, when you say waive immunity, are you suggesting that you're reading it as an unlimited waiver or only a waiver up to the insurance?
Well, I'm saying that the second sentence of D is a waiver of immunity for all types of conduct, ordinary negligence, gross negligence, reckless conduct.
But my question is
but it's still capped. It still would be capped under our interpretation by the limits of insurance as to the state.
Well, and that's what I thought we held in the Pauley case.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Chris Campanovo, and I represent the Sikanders, who are the appellees in this matter. The one point I'd like to make at the outset that I did not hear addressed earlier is that were this Court to grant the pending appeal, it would in essence be carving out a situation where an innocently injured civilian driver would not have any recourse at all for recovery through an act that was not their fault. To grant this appeal and interpret the statute as being a full-blown privilege across the board would leave somebody who was hit by a police officer or paramedic, et cetera, without any recourse for recovery whatsoever.
Can you explain to me or help answer the question that I asked of the other counsel? What was the Superior Court judge saying when he appeared, at least to me, to segregate from the privileges outlined in B, failure to keep a proper lookout and failure to keep a vehicle under control?
I think that's what the Superior Court did, Your Honor. I think there are four enumerated acts which have deemed to be declared not negligent, or that the officer is given a privilege to do these four things, and they are found in D. For acts or allegations or claims of negligence which do not fall within those four, failure to use due care, those sorts of general allegations, those claims still cannot be brought against the officer, but the city or the employer, the owner of the vehicle, can be held responsible for those claims. I think that's exactly the situation that was addressed in Curtis versus Martelli, when the court pulled out the ones that looked just like before and said all those claims are barred, including the respondeat superior claims, but yet let the other claims go forward against the employer. I agree with your interpretation of what the Superior Court below did in this case.
Well, I don't have an interpretation. I'm just trying to figure out what he was trying to do. It's a little difficult for me to understand how someone has a privilege to proceed past a red signal, enters the intersection while doing that, and that privilege doesn't extend to all of the acts that the police officer does as he enters the intersection. For example, what are the facts that would suggest his vehicle was out of control? Did he cross into another lane? Did he swerve off the side of the roadway and hit the curb? I mean, how is his vehicle out of control if he was privileged to be in the intersection counter to the light? What jury issue is there?
I don't know what specific act. They could be the ones that your Honor just suggested. But
well, they have to be alleged in the complaint to survive summary judgment, don't they?
Correct.
Well, what was the allegation in the complaint that suggests that he lost control of his vehicle? And this is a minor point, so you don't need to dwell on it, but do you recall from the complaint this specific allegation of how he lost control of the vehicle? My problem is, from a practical point of view, if the police officer can enter an intersection contrary to a light after slowing down, and the facts as I read them anyway were that apparently undisputed, he slowed down to 5 miles an hour, he looked to his right, when he looked to his left, he was struck. if he can enter the intersection contrary to the light and he slows down as the privilege suggests, why do we go to trial on issues of failure to keep a proper lookout and failure to keep a vehicle under control unless there's some specific fact that suggests either of those are otherwise present that would constitute an independent cause of action for negligence that's not privileged? You're either privileged to enter the intersection or you're not.
I'll agree with that, Your Honor, but I think there may be certain allegations that come up which, after you've entered the intersection in a privileged fashion, the officer does something that takes himself out of the privilege identified in...
Well, there may be, but this is summary judgment. What were the facts to suggest either of those two, either his vehicle was out of control or he failed to keep a proper lookout? What did he not do that he should have done in terms of looking out as he went into the intersection?
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, there were parked vehicles at the intersection, and I think that would fall then under the idea of failure to maintain proper lookout of the vehicle, and I don't believe that is one of the four items identified in B4.
Well, it isn't specifically, but what I'm trying to get at is trying to get an understanding of a badly worded statute, to be frank. I'm having some difficulty understanding if there's a public policy that says a police officer is free to enter a controlled intersection as long as he slows down as is necessary for safe operation, and then he's subject to allegations that he failed to keep his vehicle under control and failed to keep a proper lookout. What's he supposed to do? It doesn't make any sense. He's either privileged to go counter to that light or he's not. All these superficial allegations that grow out of it that aren't backed by specific facts that show something unique about the situation, it seems to me should be precluded from liability for him or from his employer.
Your Honor, I'm looking in the Curtis versus Martelli case to find out what additional facts were specifically pled in that case, which could answer Your Honor's question. But all because you're privileged to enter the intersection, for example, doesn't mean that once you're in there, all bets are off as to how you act, and you could lose control of your vehicle then.
Well, that's speculative, but aren't we at the summary judgment stage? We should know now what those facts are. And you get summary judgment or you don't based upon a dispute of those facts. What are the facts that suggest that the police officer did anything other than assert the privilege to which he was entitled under 4106B?
In this particular case,
yes,
Your Honor,
in this particular case.
I would have to answer that he, once he entered the intersection, did not maintain a proper lookout for other things that were around him, given the fact that the plaintiff was right there and they collided.
Okay.
I would like to address a question that Justice Holland raised, and that is, I think that the city would have all its adequate and available defenses to it in defending a general negligence claim. So by allowing the claim to go forward, you're not taking anything away from the city. They would have whatever arguments they would normally have in a defense to a negligent suit, which again dictates in favor of allowing the claim to move forward. I also think that for harmony's sake, the statute as interpreted to denote both a privilege and an immunity comports with the County and Municipal Tort Claims Act. It leaves the city or the employer owner in the same position it finds itself under that Tort Claims Act. And to read them together would make sense and be harmonious.
Going back to your exchange with the Chief Justice, in this case, your contention is the officer was allowed to disregard the light, but in doing so, had to maintain a proper lookout. And the failure to do so is the negligence that the city would be liable for, but not the officer.
Correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
And that assumes, of course, that the plaintiff is not 51% at fault.
It does. In both Justice Holland's concern and Your Honor's concern, you're still using all the same rules of negligence and how you would defend a negligence case. None of that changes in light of the way Appellee asserts that this statute should be interpreted. I would also like to point out that the statute, we believe, is not ambiguous, is not unambiguous. Let me try that again. It reads clearly.
We know what you mean. Don't ask us to repeat it either.
There is a section that talks about privileges, and there is a section in subsection D that talks about immunities. And the only way to address the liability in subsection D is how the legislature used the term immunity. And a thought that I had is that why, when this section, subsection D, was amended, did they add the section talking about governmental immunity? If it was clear that all of this talked about privileges, and the privilege would therefore prevent any claim against the city, why, when the legislature amended this, did they specifically talk about the inability to use governmental immunity? And I think the answer to that is because claims of simple negligence would be allowed to continue, and they were telling the governments, local governments, that they could not use that immunity. Finally, unless the court has any other questions, I would just simply refer them to the case law cited by appellee. The five cases that we cited all appear not 100% on point, but taken as a whole, and when you read each one of them individually, stand for the proposition that this section is both a privilege and an immunity, and that as it relates to an immunity, the city cannot avail itself of the immunity given to the officer. And for all those reasons, we would ask that you deny the instant appeal.
Thank you. Before I turn your time on, I want to make a helpful suggestion to you. I know you're excited about being here, and we're actually excited about having you here because this is a very interesting argument. But be careful not, in your response, to interrupt the question that's coming from the justice, okay?
Oh, I apologize.
That's no problem. Don't, I'm just trying to be helpful.
Okay. To address the question that you raised, you posed to the plaintiff's counsel, under the facts of this case, we don't believe Officer Connor's conduct would support a claim for failure to keep a proper lookout. The facts are basically undisputed, that Officer Connor slowed down to less than 5 miles per hour before he proceeded through the intersection. He looked to his left and to his right and didn't see any vehicles approaching, and he was kind of edging his way out into the intersection. And he turned again to look to the other side, and that's when, as he was doing that, that's when his vehicle was struck by the plaintiff's vehicle.
But do you agree that is enough to get to the jury?
Well, under Judge Slight's interpretation, it would be. But if you view the first sentence of subsection D as creating a catch-all privilege from liability for any type of conduct amounting only to ordinary negligence, that issue wouldn't go to the jury, because under the circumstances, Officer Connor's, a reasonable juror couldn't conclude that Officer Connor's conduct exceeded ordinary negligence.
But a reasonable juror could conclude that it did, but as to him as an individual, he was privileged and wouldn't be liable.
Yes, if it...
But what about his employer? What about the city?
Well, if the first sentence of subsection D is construed as a privilege, under the restatement second of agency, section 217, which the Superior Court actually relied on and adopted as a rule, the city would also be entitled to the protection of that privilege if it's construed as a privilege. Now, under the plaintiff's interpretation...
Does that render the last sentence meaningless then?
No, it doesn't, because an immunity, in the context of tort liability, an immunity is something distinct from a privilege. And the Superior Court actually adopted that definition of privilege and immunity under the restatement, second of agency, section 217. He adopted that definition where a privilege denotes the absence, well, a privilege denotes the conduct which under ordinary circumstances subjects an actor to liability under particular circumstances does not subject him thereto. And the court also cited the definition of immunity in the comments to Section 217, and immunity denotes the absence of civil liability for what would be a tortious act, but for the relation between the parties or the status or position of the actor. So if you look at subsection D, it has to be read in connection with subsection A and subsection C as well. And the protection under the first sentence of subsection D, it clearly doesn't apply to emergency vehicle drivers or government employees in all circumstances. If you read it in connection with subsection A, it only applies in the specific situation where they're responding to an emergency. And subsection D also places another condition on the protection of that sentence, and that condition is that they have to also be complying with the provisions of subsection C regarding the use of audible or visual signals.
Do you agree with the opening statement of your opponent that if we accept your argument that a person injured as a result of an emergency vehicle will have no remedy at all?
Can I answer the question even
though? Yes.
In this particular context, in an emergency vehicle, if the officer or if the emergency vehicle driver's conduct was only ordinary negligence, yes, under this particular situation, that would be true. But it's necessary for policy reasons to encourage prompt responses to emergencies. So it places the burden on civilian drivers to be vigilant in this particular circumstances. And they are, because of the distinctive coloring of emergency vehicles and the use of lights and sirens, they're usually in a better position to notice an emergency vehicle in the case of an emergency and slow down and yield in that situation.
Thank you very much, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.